This week on The Droids, we're talking about Andor Episode 6, The Eye. We could not look away. Do we have any eyes left? We'll find out on this week's episode of The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, I am Mike. And Chris, what an episode. I really wonder if we should change that sound that we do with our voices. Is that sound meant to be a lightsaber? Is that sound meant to be someone jumping in hyperspace?
It's just a general charge-up. I mean, I think we could apply it, though, to what we heard. I'll tell you what, Mike. I just about fell off my couch when that first one went by.
When the first star or whatever meteorite was going by in the sky over Aldani?
Yes, exactly. And then when there was 30 of them, I was hiding.
And then thousands later, I still need to figure out what is the name. I kept on thinking they were saying townies, but maybe it was Doonies. I don't remember what they were calling the locals.
I couldn't quite figure it out either. There was a lot of new world language in that.
And a lot of new characters, incredible moments, fantastic acting, the writing just has been top-notch. But once again, we in our text thread of The Droids, we all were kind of like, we're getting vibes of 2017 again. Feel like we're back in the Last Jedi era. Give that credit to Sam on that call out. But Chris, let's get right into this episode. There's so much to love about it. You know, I just listed several things about it, but I think there's a lot of this continues to be, and I'd be curious what Ryan and Sam feel about this. They're off on their own quest. Where are they pilgrimaging, Chris? Like, they're off 15 years trying to find their own moment of the eye, similar, right?
I mean, I think they're looking for it. I saw them steal a bunch of uniforms earlier in the day, so I think they're gearing up for something. I have no idea what. It might just be a coincidence, though.
Well, I hope they don't run into any Imperial entanglements.
Imperial entanglements.
But I wonder about, like, this felt, again, like a completely satisfying single episode of television. And there's been so much to me of that within Andor. And I was trying to get ready for us to do this episode, Chris, and I looked at the beginning of the episode and the way it set up the conclusion of the episode. So for anybody who's listening to this, obviously we're going to be spoiling so much of what happens in episode 6. But you look at the character of Nemec, and we start with that conversation between Cassian and Nemec and really talking about the nerves that he has. And within that, you almost wonder, is this the foreshadowing? Is he going to make it through this? And you almost felt that throughout a little bit of his story arc or character arc from when he was introduced in episode 3. But I just kind of felt like that full circle of, as you watch the beginning, knowing that it informs the end and not the end of the character over a 6-episode series, but the end of that character's story within that individual episode. So I really took this entire episode and felt very much satisfied, engrossed, overwhelmingly, as you mentioned, like visceral in the reaction to it.
Yeah.
In so many different moments that I just want to tip my droid cap, the Loath cat, off to the entire crew that made this, because that was one episode in itself that stood on its own, that even if you came into it without very much information, even if you didn't have the buildup, it stands alone and works.
Absolutely. It was like a short film. Like the way that character information and things were revealed, and just throughout the whole episode how we were getting details based on how they perceived and how they were acting, it was like it was so impressive on so many levels that, like, I almost forgot that I was watching Andor, and I was just like, I felt like I was just watching something happening in this world
without a doubt. And that's the beauty of this. There's a couple times where I've thought this is really the best thing I'm watching, period, not just the best Star Wars thing. And we're not trying to diminish other Star Wars projects, even though we've done a little bit of that in previous episodes. I think we're just trying to say that this one feels like it separates itself. And we've talked about the mirror that it's kind of put up to our own culture, our own society, the way that we approach things, and really made us think more deeply about some of the way we interact with each other and the world that is around us politically. But I don't mean to say that this episode on its own didn't need the other episodes because I think it's more fulfilling because this we had them. But it still yet works on its own. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, this is kind of, I mean, this could have been, I almost wonder if they like wrote this episode first.
Yeah.
to some degree to be like, all right, here's where we need to get to. But like, in the other episodes, they do help, and they kind of establish, if you were coming into Cassian's character blind, then it helps establish a little bit there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, like, I mean, yes, it has the benefit of Rogue One, this episode does. But, I mean, to see them execute and then to kind of get a feel of their motives throughout, like, this whole just, who can you trust? Who do you trust? That's just passing through on almost every level. Like, you start to see the seams of the Empire. You start to see the seams of the local people there as they're climbing up that mountain, and they start, and just the tension rising with them singing juxtaposed with the heist going on. It was like it was just masterfully done, and it was one of those moments with Star Wars that was like just impressive to watch, and it makes you remember, like, this is like you're seeing something new, and it was exciting.
Chris, have you started your rehearsals for when you perform that song live at the next Droids meeting?
Oh, yes. What was it? It almost sounded like they were saying Adam McKay. It was. I think I wrote it out into a text to you. It said, what was it? Ame McKay Ama.
Well, Adam McKay's.
I don't know what it means. I hope I didn't just say something offensive.
he's got a hand on a lot of things. He might have a hand in writing some songs these days.
Yes. It just the idea, like the Empire knew, they knew how to speak to them, but they didn't quite know the language, so they were like translating differently. Like it was so cool.
Mm-hmm. So many aspects of this that were really stellar. But obviously, we have to give a couple of, again, tip of the Loathcat out to Dan Gilroy, Tony Gilroy's brother, who has been writing within this three-episode arc.
Family's involved.
And then I'm already forgetting her last name, but Suzanne, who is the director. This was, and the three-episode arc that we had for this was impeccably directed. But I thought that there's so many shots in this, and then also the geography. Unlike a lot of what we've watched with streaming Star Wars on the volume, this, so many places, and we've talked about it within the entire series, but especially this episode, I just believe that all of that was real. Like, did they find a dam to shoot this at then they digitally enhanced? That's what I'm wondering.
It looked, I mean, based on something I think Ryan said last week, where it was they should use the volume where they need to use a green screen. And I think there might have been a couple shots where I might have clocked that it was a volume use, but other than that, I mean, honestly, like, I think some of the flight stuff was pushing it a little bit with as far as TV special effects can go, but, like,
I thought it all looked great.
It looked fantastic. Yeah, like, I don't know what they could have done differently, to be honest with you. Susanna White
Susanna White. And I'm not familiar with her work, but when you go back and look at it, she's been in Generation Kill, Parade's End. She's done a lot of great work outside as well, working on The Deuce, Billions, Master of Sex. So a number of very, prominent series.
Yeah, she's a TV star for sure.
But TV star that, again, I felt like this was cinematic. This felt more cinematic than maybe any of the other Star Wars episodes we've watched on streaming so far.
Yeah. Yeah. It had a clear beginning and end. And then just to throw those little twists in after we got lulled into a sense of security.
Yeah. You knew that things were going to go awry, but I actually felt like they didn't go awry the way I expected and didn't go awry as soon as I expected.
Yes. Go on. Yeah.
Well, I just, you kind of felt like, oh, they've built this up. Someone's not going to be holding their blaster correctly, and they'll stop them in the midst of leading the villagers before they enter into the Imperial base. But that didn't happen. And then I also were so used to episodes, and especially with Marvel, with Star Wars, where things end. The moment of action ends, and we're jumping ahead a bit. But the moment of action ends, and then that's the end. It's like, all right, they got out. Hooray. But no, we have another 15 minutes, and we'll talk a lot about the interaction with Skeen, what happens at the very end of the episode. That was such an emotional moment to me to feel like, wait, I'm not just seeing the action. I'm seeing the conclusion of this character story and yeah. continuing to feel like I'm propelling forward just with what this story is trying to tell me yeah. and teach me about how Cassian becomes Cassian.
Yeah.
It's funny when you go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, yeah. And I mean, you scope that out even greater. I feel like it's such a good, like a character arc tied to such a time and such like a place in history that kind of relating it to like guerrilla war and how revolutions start and things like that. I mean, I feel like they're depicting the reality of that to a degree of something I'm not going to say no firsthand experience, but to a degree that people understand and know. So it's like you can have a sci-fi world, but the best sci-fi, in my opinion, tells us something about the society that we live in.
Yep.
And I think that's what this show is doing. Like, it's showing us that angle on a like a really emotional and kind of intimate level where you don't know who to trust or what to believe sometimes, and it's kind of crazy. And again, I'm not saying this from a personal anecdote. I'm just saying it's from a world perspective.
Well, and everyone feels like a character that, you know, there are stakes for those characters, there's meaning for those characters, there is a backstory in a brief moment. And I'm thinking of, what was it, the Commandant, or who, I can't remember what the name of the leader of the Empire's yeah. efforts there, and his family, and him insisting on him wearing, you know, the dress Empire robes to his right. son, and his wife just insisting that he doesn't need to do that, but yet they're trying yeah. to get off, and he's trying to impress the colonel that's there. And so they're all, right. everyone has their own, obviously, motivations,
yeah.
but this is more realized and more illustrated than so many other things we watch.
It's just something we haven't seen in Star Wars in a while. I mean, you yeah. get those details, especially if you think about the original trilogy, like it's full of those details. Like, I know we always kind of bash the writing say it's more of a visual, but those details are in there. Like, one prime example is like when Luke kills the Rancor, right? That guy, the Rancor Wrangler, like he's so sad. Like that yeah. right there, that tells a whole tale. Like, that might be the weakest example, but you can think of like the Empire and then. In A New Hope, some people call it Star Wars, when you're sitting around the table, like each one of those officers has a character. Like,
yeah.
they have a drive and a motive. And I feel like we were kind of, for the last few shows, Mando doesn't say anything. So the last few shows, we've been kind of just using what we already have and kind of, I helped clean my apartment this last week. And then I didn't really clean it. I just kind of reorganized the pieces. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I feel like we've been doing that, and this Andor series is kind of the first time that we're actually like building something new. It's not like we're not reusing old pieces.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you didn't have to throw things away, but
right.
you're putting something new in the apartment.
And, yes, exactly.
And yet using something that is still, you know, familiar enough.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that, and it's made this all the more journey that's more meaningful. And really, it's so interesting, every moment that Andor is part of this, and maybe it's because they're continuing to surround him with so many other interesting characters, but I'm not ever bored by the fact I know he dies eventually. Because even though yeah. I know he's not going to die in this setting,
right.
he still could have a foundational moment of trauma. He could lose in some way. You know, they talk about winning and losing in this episode, and he could be developed and changed as a person. And we're watching that change. We're watching him become the rebel, because even at the beginning of this episode, he's still talking to Nemec more about, you know, what the Empire is. The Empire doesn't care, and he's not a believer. And so then where do we end at the end of the episode? Nemec's manifesto being right. given to Cassian. Now, what he does right. with that, we're inferring that that's going to be something he internalizes or at least assesses a little bit more over these next six episodes. Six more episodes. We have more episodes.
that's my other disbelief. It's like we have so much. If these first six episodes, and I'll say let's put the first three as like one thing yeah. since they're released together. This show is so dense. Do you think they're going to do a time jump? That's my question. Like, I wonder if we're going to, like, all of a sudden cut to the next battlefield.
Yeah.
Or are we going to see him hop on? I mean, it's kind of always the question with Star Wars is, do they pick up where they left off, or are we ahead a few months,
so,
years?
I think actually, so we haven't gotten a time jump yet, right? We just had a very different location for these three episodes.
Yeah. One went into the other. Yeah.
Yeah. Originally, Andor, I guess the way that Tony Gilroy wrote this was 5 seasons. And they just said, we can't do this. We can't dedicate the next 12 years of our life to this. So they've already done 3 years, like in terms of writing this, preparing this, and getting this all going.
Wow.
So it'll be 5 seasons condensed into 24 episodes in 2 seasons. And my guess is that we're supposed to see, this was what we started 5 years before the Battle of Yavin. That's how we fought 5 BBY at the beginning in episode 1. I think we're probably going to jump forward at least a year.
Right.
You know, in this season. I don't know if it'll be right away or if it'll be in another 3 episodes, but I do think we're on our way to a time jump. And with that, I hope we still get to see some other characters, but I'm not actually worried if we don't get to see some of the characters we know, because I do think they keep introducing more interesting characters at every turn. But I want to go, you know, there's so much to talk about in this episode, Chris. And you know, we feel like Luthen, Stellan Skarsgård's going to be around for a while. That he got his little moment in the sun of his celebration, which is wonderful. But I want to go back and talk a little bit more about Susanna White, just very briefly, and really we should be talking about the cinematographer as well. And unfortunately, I don't have that readily in front of me. I should go and find that, because that's important. And the editing is just as important, which I believe Tony Gilroy's brother is also editing.
A different brother? Well.
Yeah, he has 2 different brothers.
Really? Are you serious?
The whole crew is working on this.
Wow.
Yeah, John Gilroy. There he is. John Gilroy and Dan Roberts. Now, I have to double check. Oh, yeah, they both were editing on this episode. But the cinematographer for this is Frank Lamb. And there's a shot where, speaking of the reality of this edifice, this, you know, dam that they're all on.
Yeah.
When they shoot it from a low angle and one of the meteorites streaks across the sky, but you're kind of enveloped with a half circle around you of the camera, I thought that was absolutely beautiful. And I couldn't help, of all the things in this episode where you see the eye in full force at the end of the episode, I just particularly really love that shot. And Chris, I wanted to ask you if you had any other shots or visuals that you really loved in this episode.
Well, I mean, I think the obvious image is that final, just the rush of thousands of those meteorites crossing through. I mean, that was just, there's like a matte painting. Like, it looked beautiful. I mean, I think the coverage on this was also phenomenal, because there was a lot of complex action happening here. Mm-hmm. A lot of different pieces moving at the same time. And it's, I would say, it's easy to fail at this, because you got a lot of people running, and if you don't know where people are in respect to where the other characters are and how detailed the detail of getting into the elevator, them going down and that kind of thing, and clearing the way for the next path. If you don't know where characters are, the suspense just kind of gets chipped away at points, because then it's like, no, I guess they're safe, they're in the thing. But the fact that we know the through lane, we know where they have to go. I mean, these scenic shots they did, I would assume those are, what, in England somewhere?
I believe they were in the Scottish Highlands.
In the Scottish Highlands.
Because I listened to
Great Britain,
an interview with Eben Mosbachrock on the Watch podcast, which, great interview, great podcast.
Yeah.
And he talked about the time that he spent. I think they did like 2 months out there. And 2 months for 3 episodes, but 3 episodes are basically like a movie. So, you know, not surprising that they had all that time out there. And, you know, his character from The Bear must have been having some haggis. And so instead of Italian beef sandwich, he was having a haggis, right?
A bit of a crossover. I get it. But yeah, I mean, the scenery was just beautiful. Like, it felt like it just, in maybe it's not fair, and I appreciate the digital effect. It just like felt like we were somewhere.
it really did. And I miss that feeling so much, Chris. And that's the thing that I think, being younger and watching Star Wars, and maybe this show and this planet, if Aldani isn't the best example, because it is basically feels like an Earth planet anyway, or an Earth-type atmosphere.
But I've never seen so much green in all my life.
Oh, Ray. But I feel like there's times where I remember having my worldview expanded watching Star Wars, because they made another part of our planet feel like a different planet. Yeah, mm-hmm. you were just on Hoth, Chris. You were just there.
It goes back to that, kind of what I was saying, just even plot-wise. Like, it's familiar yet distant, And somehow that draws your connection to whatever you're watching or whatever you're doing. It's when they, when you go too far out of it, like if they just made up every word and every object had no reference, and I feel like it just, it gets harder and harder to connect with it. Because it kind of, to a degree, pulls you out of it because you're like too focused on, but then no, you realize that these characters and stuff, there is a parallel between us and them. And then that way it's like, it lulls you into it. And then I'm there for the ride. Like the whole Imperial thing, the idea of that these people, and this is like new territory for Star Wars, the idea kind of starting with Force Awakens too, it's like the idea that the bad guys have families, quote unquote, bad guys have families. And that kind of thing is like, there's so much room to explore there. Like, everyone has a little backstory, and they kind of get into this stuff in Clone Wars, but we've never really seen it in the live action view this way.
I think we got a little bit of a taste, and you got a little bit of it with the other officers and the other members, not who weren't stormtroopers, but you just kind of got a little bit more of, even some of them that were in awe of the eye, made them seem more human.
Yes, exactly. And then you have this kind of parallel with the senator and her family, and Mon Mothma's, and her family, and you're kind of seeing, like, oh, like, there's all sides to this empire taking over, and they kind of say how it doesn't just happen, right? It's just like, it slowly builds. It's not like one day it's different.
Yeah. Well, you're right, Chris. We got to avoid that slow build out here in the real world and in the non-Star Wars world.
Exactly. The show is yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've been in the middle of a presentation and had some rebel strike get in the way of what I'm trying to say to the entire open Senate.
I'm so sorry, Mike. I apologize. If I didn't know that was you, I would not have busted in the room with funfetti.
Funfetti to celebrate the rebel strike.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Chris, I think we've kind of covered the build-up to when they start to actually reveal themselves and actually start their heist, because we've talked about, obviously, them in disguise, making their way towards the Imperial base, but then they also have their interactions with really Lieutenant Gorn. I want to talk about Lieutenant Gorn and Lieutenant Gorn throughout this. Yeah. I really like that character a lot. And I really liked the subtlety in his performance and where he was doing his best to make this all work. And even when things went bad, he was still trying to hang on to it. And then I also liked that he was dispatched, you know, horribly, that he died, but he didn't, there wasn't fanfare. There wasn't an overwhelming like, oh, we are going to go and, you know, lie by his side to save him. You don't even really see him die. It's just a quick shot and it's over. Whereas, and he's always been a little bit distant compared to the rest of the rebels that we spent time with because he's been at the base. I just really liked his moments of working to make this all happen slowly in the previous episodes, but also in this episode where he has to keep up appearances, really distract the other Imperials, and in a lot of ways just oversee this silently until there's the moment that he breaks and gets to actually reveal himself and share. He's like, oh, you'll hang for this. And he's like, better than 7 more years of being with you. I can't remember exactly what he says.
Right, yeah, we see his true feelings. Yeah, exactly. Like, the alternative is better than being here kind of thing. I mean, absolutely. And, like, they did it with such a nuance that it again, it's like one of these things where it's not just like a switch and where he's not, I'm the spy. It's not.
Wait, is that a line from Star Wars?
Yeah. I can't remember which one that's from. I feel like they did a very good job, but then also kind of this idea that he's like a true believer, right? And he believes in the cause. And these guys and women as casualties in this kind of journey, like, I think it shows that, based on how Andor reacts, it's kind of like, oh, Andor is really just, he's not in it yet. He's just here to do the job and walk away. And I think as soon as, it almost gave you the idea that he was kind of buying into it a little bit, right? That he was like, I could see this is really important. These people are doing their work. They're good. They're good scoundrels to a degree. And then as soon as the bear man reveals himself, he's like, nope, I let him in too close. I can't do this. I'm out.
Oh, Skeen.
Yeah.
Well, and let's. I want to talk more about that scene in a moment. But you know, throughout the entire heist, again, we talked about the geography of it, but we talked about the tension that builds up. I like the way that they set up again the family to be there to have a reason for why again the commander would make the other officers follow the lead, because you would have thought that there's 10 of them, even with a couple of blasters, someone would have made a move, but they knew that they were putting in jeopardy that family. So they didn't do that until things then did go to hell.
Yeah.
And the radio officer comes down with a group of soldiers. So that back and forth, that was really well executed until they then escape, and heartbreaking to see Nemec be crushed by the very thing they were trying to steal.
The old 1-2 punch. It's like something bad, something good, something bad.
Well,
a triple hit. It was like unexpected, because it didn't feel like, you know what? Like when they pull off a heist, normally in the movies, especially think like Solo, exception of, I guess maybe don't think of Solo, but they usually they get away and everything feels good, and it feels good that it works out. But then there's always like the one little thing. And when you got crushed by all that money, yikes.
Well, we also have to give some credit we haven't mentioned very much. Taramin, who was the kind of lead, who was a former stormtrooper, he doesn't make it out either. So our three losses in this are Lieutenant Gorn.
Obituary,
Gorn,
yeah.
Yeah, Taramin and then Nemec. The three of them are gone. We don't know what has happened to Cinta. She was remaining all in Aldani at the end. But very interesting, Chris, and I'm curious your thoughts on Vel and Cinta, clearly in a relationship together, and a relationship that was not just fleeting, the way that we saw at the end of Rise of Skywalker, where there was just a brief kiss.
Right.
This was,
and then it's also kind of adds another layer to why they're fighting. Like, they're fighting for each other, and she wanted her to be safe. And we started to see these little vulnerabilities get released throughout this, where everyone was like, we didn't really know this crew Andor was with. We didn't know if they knew each other and how long they knew each other, what they were really doing. And then I think when it went to pen to the paper, like it, all of a sudden you had what's his name? The man who got crushed by the money.
Nemec
say something like this idea where he's like, I haven't slept, I won't have any strength. And then the adrenaline kicks in. Like, those are such great character details. They're so, like, they enrich the character so much and like really put you in there. But then to have this scene with the both of those women kind of say like, hey, like, I need you to be safe. Like, that's more emotional than Star Wars usually gets.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you were talking about like these little things that reveal more about the characters.
Yeah.
In a lesser show, you would have been like, hello, let me introduce you to my partner. And they would have just been very upfront about it. And then
they would have been staring at the camera while they said it. Yeah.
This is kind of trying to be as real as it would be, because you're not forcing interaction, it's forcing dialogue to reveal character. You're letting actions and moments and heightened moments be the ones that really reveal more.
And I think we can keep comparing this to whatever shows and things we want, and I think I'll keep comparing this to like the original trilogy, is that even if the dialogue is not there, it's, we are seeing in a visual sense coupled with the dialogue, like the action moving along. And I don't know that Star Wars has really been able to do this in this way for quite a while.
Yeah. No, without a doubt. But nice to see some representation within this, within Star Wars.
Absolutely.
And I think that'll hopefully continue. But I hope that there's a moment, and depending on this time jump, are we going to see Vel again and Cinta again and have a chance to see more of their relationship? We'll find out.
Yeah.
But this, you know, they escape, they somehow get off the planet, but as they're making their move, they have to give a stimulant to get Nemec back in, you know, operating procedure so that his mind is functioning so he can help them navigate their way out of the eye, given what they need to do. And I'm so excited to go back and watch the earlier episodes, because he was talking about that navigation tool that was not current technology, that couldn't be tracked by the Empire. And I'm just want to go back and think about what he said originally to then put them in the position where they needed him to make those calls about the coordinates. And Chris, I don't know how you felt, but every time he was yelling climb, I couldn't help but think about K2SO. And that is what K2SO is saying at the end of Rogue One, is yelling climb. And it was just, it was a really interesting, I imagine intentional, but he's, you know, because there's, he asked him to climb, then he asked him to drop, or I can't remember what.
I didn't pick that up.
Yeah, but there's a few times he yells climb, and so there's a little bit of a crossover, a parallel between those two.
Interesting. So he's inside of K2SO.
Oh, no. Is it like L3? L3 is now the Millennium Falcon?
Yeah, exactly. He's inside. And,
Namek. No, I don't want him to be stuck in a droid, which I want to ask you this question, Chris, because I've been kind of thinking about this, not just because of this episode, but the past few. Where does K2SO fit in this story? I don't think he fits in season one, but also the tone of K2SO is just would feel so out of place in this show.
Yeah, there's a sense. I mean, maybe if you tailor it down a little bit, I could see it kind of working. Yeah. I mean, I assume they get him from some other subsequent heist. Like he's one of the treasures they steal, or he's on a ship that they get, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I think he's going to pop up. I would guess season two. I mean, it doesn't seem like season one. They're really pulling those kind of cards.
And it could be a long burn to get K2 to be the snarky droid that he is.
Right. Right.
One.
He could be like, you could have being reprogrammed. Yeah, exactly.
So, and it could be a little bit more, you know, dark and a little bit more in line with the themes of what we had. It was interesting to think about because I do feel this is obviously very connected to Rogue One, but in a lot of ways, I'm like, this is so different than Rogue One. This feels way more narrow in its scope, and obviously they're not going to steer the Death Star plans right now, so it's a little bit more, it is very much more specific. But I just, as we can't help but reiterate, like grounded in reality, grounded in this lived-in world that feels much more lived-in than Rogue One, and part of that is when you have all these episodes to go through to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the work that they're doing is at the service of the story, and the product of that is this amazing world. And I think we've kind of taken the world for granted the last few Star Wars things, where we haven't really had to think too hard on what we love and what we know. And now they're finally kind of using these tools in a way that's like, it's so exciting. Like, I'm just so excited to watch it week by week and just to have this show. And the best part is, it's like, this is the show that I was probably the least excited for in the lineup. Like, I heard it was good. I was happy to watch it, but it wasn't like, oh man, can't wait to go back to that. And now I'm just like, this is it. Like,
well, what a pairing, we've mentioned it so many times, between the writing and then all of these incredible British actors who've been dropped in, you know, as well as there's great actors from all over the world. Obviously, Diego Luna is not a British actor,
right,
but he's fantastic in this. And then same with Eben Moss-Bachrock. There's a lot of good acting throughout across all of this. But I've been so pleased to watch this show pair those things together, and great directing. It's really everything that we're looking for. But Chris, before we move on to kind of like the ending of this, what else did you love about the final escape from the planet? And I will start by saying, the amount of time it took the TIE fighters to get to their actual TIEs was also something I loved. And you didn't just see them screech out of their base. It was going to show them running across the catwalk to jump in, to get set. Yeah.
I mean, it goes back to this idea that like the Empire, and you could see this with the Senate scenes and kind of that, the Empire HQ when they keep cutting back to, like, we're going to figure this out kind of stuff. They're still learning what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've conscripted all these people. They're still figuring this all out. We see that with those details. Like you said, they were, like, gawking at the asteroids overhead and all that stuff. Like, they're still figuring out all this stuff as well.
Yeah.
And so to see that detail of them, like, running around, and like maybe that's the first time that those pilots had to even have any kind of combat because they're on this sleepy planet. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely.
It's like this idea. You're right though. Like usually the thing is, oh, there they are, the TIE fighters in. But now we're starting to see the seams of the Empire in a way we haven't really seen before either.
And we learned about, they knew what the timing was. They knew, they had an idea of how much time they would have to escape the Eye before they were engulfed by it. They knew how much time they had until the TIE fighters would be on them, and they knew they had no real defenses in what they were trying to use to escape with the payroll. So I loved all of that. I loved the visuals. I really think, again, it looked like, you mentioned how much budget they spent to make that happen.
Yeah.
But the TIEs out there running into whatever the meteorite specks that are hitting their windshield of the TIE fighter. And the same thing is happening to the ship that our rebels are on, but they're making enough fast moves and making it out quickly based on the navigation to be able to escape. So really just stunning, incredibly tense. And, you know, at that point where you talked about falling off the couch, Chris, I mean, that was maybe one time where I was ready to jump up off the couch.
Yeah, sure.
Because you want them to escape and you care so much about them because we've learned about them over this time. But then, as I said, it then stops. And they're away, and they're free, and they're trying to save Nemec, and they have that choice to make about whether or not they're going to try to save him. Vel doesn't want to do it, and then Cassian does. They end up there, and we get to this conversation with Skeen and Clem. And the proposition is $40 million for you, $40 million for me.
Yeah.
But this is, you thought about winning, this is how we win, and $40 million is enough for me to forget that you exist. Right. I immediately connected it to The Last Jedi and the character of DJ.
Oh, absolutely.
It is very similar to here is this opportunity where Cassian may not have the, you know, the devil and the angel on his shoulders. He just has this opportunity, thanks to a devil who's speaking into him, to give him the chance to be the worst version of himself. And he has seen this in front of him, and Skeen is that character to present another option to him.
Yeah.
And as much as we have seen Cassian do terrible things, he's making that choice that puts him in the camp of good because he didn't take what was offered to him by what is the evil option. Or the less, the, you know, however you want to define it, evil, but also the more selfish option.
They kind of seal the deal with that, because for a while part of me thought, after Nemec dies, that he was kind of like, or just the fact that he was hurt and he kind of knew that the end was up for him, part of me was like, is he just like, I'm done with the rebellion? But then when that detail that he's like, I made up the story,
that
to me is kind of when it's like, this guy's just another scoundrel, like both of those guys kind of felt to me,
he's like, I don't have a brother.
Yeah, exactly. And it was kind of like, oh, wow. Okay, so this guy, he's actually real deep. I mean, I knew something was up with him.
I mean, no offense to Eben Moss Bacharach, but pretty much you know he's in the show.
Yeah.
He's not going to be above
board. He's going to have questionable morals, yeah. Yeah, but it got me, though, up to the end. Like, up until and then the shot got me. Like,
the shot completely got me.
In cold blood, like that. That to me was like, well, I hope this wasn't a test.
What was like, you're right. What was what was your reaction the moment he shot?
I literally gasped.
Yeah, I kind of like threw my arms up and just like gave out a like, woo-hoo-hoo! Like I was just,
yeah.
I don't, my I initial said, reaction to that was kind of, wow, he was so decisive in his decision to not go down that path. But it is, as with everything within this show, it isn't that easy. It isn't that straightforward. He's still not fully bought in, but he is enough of the person that we know he will be to make the decision there to stop someone from doing something that would have hurt others.
He took his pay cut. He's getting out.
Yeah.
He's not taking more. I got to mention, when I was watching them move the money into the ship, and I thought that was also another cool detail where he was like, it's like, all right, all you guys playing Sabacc down here, which I have to assume is what they were playing.
Yeah.
You guys now have to help move this money. There was so much money.
Oh, I know.
In that thing. It was like daunting to watch them try to move it all. Yeah. And then what's his name? The Admiral, he has like a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's not used to the Empire, as they talked about, being so fat and satisfied. And
I'm
not talking about physically. I'm talking about the way they described it.
Right, exactly.
That he's not done any physical activity. And they even allude to that earlier on when he can't, his belt is, you know.
Exactly. His so they kind of like make it a full little story there where that's just kind of gluttonous in his ways. And so then he grabs everything. But it was just, it was really daunting to watch them, how much they actually had to move into the ship.
Yeah, and build even more tension based on this is not a simple mission. This
and you
is
got
not...
a real set. You got a such a sense of how heavy everything was too, yeah. And just like it really was like everything was working for this.
Well, and what a way for Nemec to be injured, because
right.
so much of anything that is not a rapid heist to escape, they would have had time to secure their cargo. They would have mm-hmm. gone through the motions, but no, they needed to get out of there right away. And what a logical thing to happen when you're trying to escape that quickly, that the massive things that you've brought on there could right. be dangerous and injure someone.
Yeah.
I liked that touch, that it wasn't, oh, he was hit by a blaster and we dragged him on and he's going to die. It was, he's on where he should be safe. The doors are closed and he's crushed.
Yeah.
Your moment,
that stuff down.
Your moment of feeling relief that they're going to make it, and then
just immediately another
character's gone.
Just but brutal.
The other thing, and I can't give credit to where I saw it because I should have made note, but I thought it was really meaningful and impactful that the story of the brother wasn't real, because what did Cassian, what was the impetus for him to get involved? What started all of this? He's looking for his sister. And for right. someone to use the story of a sibling that they lost as a way to manipulate others clearly yeah. hit close to home for him.
Yeah. Now, my question is, did he make that up, or was that what he was given to get Andor?
What do you mean?
Like,
what's Luthen? His name?
Did Luthen make up that tale?
Or
did
somebody I don't know. Hand him that? I feel like that's not the case, because remember, we have no Vel says no, that right. like Luthen is really the only contact that Luthen has right. is Vel.
Well, but then doesn't she also say though that Luthen wants to tell you something?
To Skeen?
When they're at the fire in the past episode, she says.
Oh, does he? Oh, you might be right. I don't remember.
She cues him up. She says Luthen wants to tell you something.
But no, you're talking about Skeen.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm mixing up my character. I'm not talking about Luthen. I mean Skeen. She says Skeen wants to tell you something.
Oh.
She sets up the conversation.
It could be, but I
so I doubt it. Yeah, I mean that's
the way
like
this
seemed.
It felt like bloated, Skeen was pretty independent on his own.
Yes,
and
at that point in time, yeah, he seemed like the chips had fallen. Literally, the Sabacc chips were on the ground, and I think he was like, "All right, I'm out."
And then we get the interaction with Vel after Nemec has died, and as you said, Cassian just wants to take his cut and go. I liked the work of the four-armed doctor. It felt very different than the tech-infused alterations and enhancements in Boba Fett, where there was that, like, whatever kind of character that was.
Yeah.
This just felt a little bit better.
It makes sense. I mean, that guy, he's got a real practical advantage having four arms and being a doctor. And it reminded me a little bit of Maz Kanata.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I felt the same way. I completely agree.
Didn't have four arms, did she? No.
She did not.
Yeah.
But I like the interaction that they have, and then there's that handoff like we talked about of Nemec's manifesto. I need to watch that scene again, because I still feel like I'm trying to process where Cassian is as this ends. Because again, he's making a choice to keep the money for everyone who's in the rebellion, because apparently he still trusts Vel while not trusting Skeen. And yet he's making his leave, and it seems like Vel is just as confused as well, because she's like, okay, you've killed Skeen, I'm upset, you're a bastard, she says. But then she gives him Nemec's manifesto, because Nemec asked to do that.
Right.
And I just find it a really interesting next
I just
place
kinda
of
got,
where they're at.
I got goosebumps when you just said that, because it's almost a sign to Andor that her word is good.
Yeah, because she's following through on what...
Yeah, exactly. Like, she knows the word is bond with them, and so she must clearly have trusted Nemec in that way. So it's like about as a code of honor that the characters have.
And speaking of Nemec a little bit more, Alex Lawther, I love that performance. When he was struggling on the ship as they were exiting, as they were trying to leave Aldani, it reminded me of Giovanni Ribisi's character from Saving Private Ryan.
Oh yeah,
is he playing the medic in Saving Private Ryan, where he's asking for his mom as he dies. Yeah, Wade.
Yes. Oh gosh. Yeah. Where
he plays Wade, and they're all surrounded around him.
Yep.
And that scene is obviously more devastating.
I
just kind of that moment where they're all trying to, you know, help him, and he's you know that he's in mortal peril and this is probably not going to work out, and you're watching him sort of come to the realization that this isn't going to work out, but he's still trying to help. I just thought that was all very tough to watch.
I mean, it's plays out like a battlefield. Like, I mean, Rogue One is kind of like a wartime film in the same way. Then this is kind of like the prelude to that. I mean, the characters just start to experience the fact that they're entering into like a war, and this is how it starts.
Yep. And then we wrap up this episode with Mon Mothma in the Senate for just a mere moment.
I love we got a little view of the Senate.
You know, it was very interesting because it reminded me of the actual U.S. Senate where there were a lot of empty chambers. And you're like, where is everybody? Exactly. Where are people supposed to be there?
Well, now you're starting to see. Yeah, exactly. Especially juxtaposed from how we usually see it. Now, I mean, you're starting to see the Senate's relevance start to fall apart. And I was peeping. I was looking for some E.T. style aliens. I didn't see any Easter eggs. Well, we did get an Indiana Jones though, right?
Yeah, in the last episode we did. We got that Shankara. Yeah, the Shankara.
Yeah. Now, after I heard that from you, you can bet. Not the only Star Wars Indiana Jones reference too. You can bet now I'm looking all over for these little details. I know he said no fan service, but it's not. He's still not.
Yeah. Well, this is fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is, you know, little moments that somebody catches on the side is not bad.
This could just be the prop masters, and he's not going to question what that is.
But then we get the moment with Luthen, and he has somebody reading about, Aldani and the rebel attack, and he has to go to the back where he... I just like that moment that he learns about it by somebody who's sitting in the shop, and then he starts laughing. And, you know, it's interesting he starts laughing because, he doesn't know that it's successful. But maybe he just is inferred. It's like at the very least, you know, they were able to disrupt. Like it's enough. Like he may not know the details, but he knows poked, enough that they did the job.
Yes. Yeah. He poked the world and it made an effect. And I think that's like.
I love that, Chris. Put that one on a t-shirt.
He poked the world. I think I stole that from Steve Jobs about this.
Oh, did you?
But he poked and it made a push. But he. If you think about his character, he's like an older person, so he saw the before times, before the Empire.
Yeah.
So now he's like, wow, this actually worked, and I'm taking all these people's money.
Well, I am just beyond thrilled about this. Chris, anything that we missed in the episode that you wanted to touch on?
I mean, we wanted to just briefly say that the local people... That whole thing was
townies or doonies or whatever they were.
Yeah, and it was great when he kind of told them off, and then the two younger people kind of looked at each other like, "Whoa!" I forget what he said to them. It was basically like, "May you find good" or something like that.
Yeah, and then
I mean, just the whole setup of how they would occupy that space, but still let them come in, and just I think that was just a neat detail. And I hope it'd be cool if that came back in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. I feel like we're moving on. We also, I think we've pretty much seen everything now, right? Nothing from, other than the moment where Mon Mothma says that, you know, if everybody thinks that I'm doing this, then they really know what I'm up to. And I'm butchering what she actually has in the dialogue there. But we haven't seen that moment yet in the show.
No.
And you have to think there's going to be more with Dedra, and they have actually, we have that moment where the Imperials are all called in and you get a nice line from the Imperial officer just being like, call your families. You're not coming home. And it was like, wait a second. Yeah. All of these Imperial officers probably have a family that they're going home to.
Exactly. Yeah. Which, I mean, we're starting to see like the weird inter-office bureaucratic politics of all of this stuff that we've spent so much time just always talking about in Star Wars, and it's just cool to be in that world again.
And we get to continue to be in that world, Chris.
For hours more.
I we talked about it before, you know, you set the template, you set the tone, you do this. I think there can be many iterations of what Star Wars is. And this is, I don't know that the conversation has been as much about this as it was about Obi-Wan, or as much about Boba Fett. At least it doesn't seem like it is. I hope that, I want to shout it from the rooftops, please, Lucasfilm, keep making things like this. I know there's not another Tony Gilroy and the Gilroy brothers all behind every other corner, but I want us to do as much of this as possible. And maybe we can, if we're fed, you know, three series a year that are along this lines and two series a year that are more surface level, that works for me. I'm fine with that. I might be asking too much, maybe a little bit too much.
I mean, you got it's all about dessert and vegetables, right? That's what we always say. It's
but the vegetables in this case are also the dessert for me.
Well, then it's a carrot cake.
You know what? I've had some very sweet carrot cakes.
Very
sweet. You know, we saw a little bit of, you got to give some more Star Wars food love, because we saw the setting of the catering for when they were going to celebrate the Empire.
Yeah.
They had a couple of cocktails there that were very similar to the glasses from Solo.
I felt bad for them. They had the whole thing all set up.
Well, and you knew the caterers couldn't fight back. They didn't have weapons.
Exactly.
They also carried around a lot of mouthpieces to cover up people. They had at least like 8 of those, I think we saw.
Yeah.
You know, you don't usually see that well prepared when you're trying to bound and gag people.
Well, that's true. That is true. They probably they buy them in bulk.
There's a Rebel Depot store somewhere. Yeah, well, hey, look, now they have enough cash. They've got enough to be able to build out. Maybe this is, you know, we'll find out what this Imperial payroll went to. What if it went to I wouldn't say the Tantive IV, because that's something from Alderaan, but could it be some of the other ships that we know? Could it be funding a Rebel base that we eventually see?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm excited to see what they do with the funds.
This kind of draws into directly to like A New Hope, when they talk about like how they'll be able to pay.
Yeah.
Han Solo.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Probably
yeah.
This is the money they're probably using to pay him.
Oh, you're right.
How else are they making money?
How you didn't know, Han, you know, what was sacrificed? Who we lost in the rebellion to give you these funds. Take your reward, Han. And remember Nemec.
See, it adds depth
and
to
Gorn.
That scene.
Yeah. I miss them all already, Chris.
I know.
Well,
I miss Han too, but that's a different story.
Well, it's a different, We have a chance to go back. They can always do Solo 2. They can always get Solo 2.
Let's make it happen. That's the point here.
Where do you think we're going next, Chris?
I honestly can't even say. I mean, is Clem on a hunt for his sister still?
Yeah, I wonder.
If that's the idea, then I think we're going to be flying to another planet. Oh, and also, was it this episode or last episode where they referenced Jakku?
The last episode, I think.
It was last episode. Okay. Well, hey, maybe we'll end up on Jakku.
We've had a lot of desert. I think this one's staying away from the desert.
A desert-free series. Yeah. That's good.
just for once. I think we are going to catch back up with Cyril at some point and see what he's up to and where he goes from his embarrassment in leading and destroying his planet by giving it over to Imperial rule. I think you're right that we're going to follow a little bit more of this path to find his sister. And then I think we're going to see more of Cassian being called in by Luthen for maybe another opportunity.
I think we're also going to at some point have to make our way to what's the planet with the words Obi-Wan, but they're rearranged.
I don't know which one you're talking about.
In Rogue One, it's the letters of Obi-Wan. Hold on. Planets in Rogue One.
Well, there's Scarif is in Rogue One, so it's not that one.
Wobani.
Oh, Wobani. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, and we have to find Forrest Whitaker, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. So I think, I believe that's on Wobani. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So Guerrera.
You know the big platform city, that thing.
Is that Wobani? I thought that was
Or is that somewhere else?
I thought that was a different planet, and I'm forgetting the name of it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. If you know, write in.
Right into the
droids. @gmail.com. Follow us. Instagram Droids Pod, Facebook The Droids You're Looking For Podcast.
Chris,
and also
I'm
putting out the request here. Let's get some reviews.
Yeah.
If you're listening and you like what you hear, or if you don't like what you hear and you're not buying it, leave a review, please. I would love it. We would love it. All of us. Even Sam and Ryan, who are mid-heist right now. They're probably going to be done with it pretty soon.
You know, I look forward to them coming back. I think Sam is, you know, going to love every James Bond moment of this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I know Ryan loved this moment, all of it, too, but this is very James Bond. And again, so much in line with what we would expect from Tony Gilroy, but oof, just well executed. And I love when they're waiting. It's... And that we didn't even talk about the moment Vel decides whether or not they're going to go on the mission. Like whether or not, when she's sitting there on top and they're all waiting. And they're
was this their first mission? Like, what, you know?
Yeah, we don't.
That's like those were the questions where she was just like, "Is this really gonna happen?" Like she was like, "This is it. There's no going back after this. It's all talk."
Yeah.
Up until this point, Jedha is the name of that planet.
But that's not Obi-Wan, respelled.
No. Well, I was thinking it was Wobani, which is Obi-Wan.
Which one is Wobani?
Wobani is, I think, where it starts out. That kind of like mining planet where she, Jyn Erso's in
jail. Right. That's right. Okay, now you got it. All right.
Jedha is where you see the big statues. Should have remembered.
Yeah, we should have remembered.
And there's
that.
Kyber. Yeah, so I feel like we're going to see Jedha at some point.
That's not a bad bet. But I Jedha sticks in my mind, obviously not that well, because we didn't just say it off the top of our head doing this episode. But yeah. Jedha sticks in my mind for what is what I think one of the weirder voiceover moments in Rogue One, where they jump off of that carrier and it's the reinforcements and the guy goes, "For Jedha!" You know, it doesn't sound right.
Yeah, it's a little weird. It's like a Wilhelm scream. Yeah, they should start throwing that into things.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll do that in sound effects of the meteorites flying across the sky. That's what we're adding to the next episode. Get ready.
Wow. We did it. Man, this is so great.
Chris, I love talking Star Wars and I love new great Star Wars. This is... We got to remember these great times because we're going to be at a time, who knows from where, watching an episode of something that may not be as exciting, whether it's Star Wars or not. And we need to really bask in this and love every bit. And we have.
Absolutely.
That is going to do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Catch us next week for episode 7. We're with you all the way through Thanksgiving with more Andor, more to talk about. It doesn't end, and I am giddy about it, Chris. That's going to do it for the Droids.
Andor?
Hey, Andor. Hey. Give me one of those Aldani songs.
Andor.
Can you give me one of those Aldani songs? Hey, pretty good.
Is that good?
I mean, I'll go back and watch it again. See if
yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Put the subtitles on. Let's get that going. We'll record a version of that,
and then we'll release it on our SoundCloud.
Yeah, exactly.